This is the Podium Finish Live from Austin, Texas, and various points across the country. Here's your host, Rob Tiansen.
And a good day to everyone out there listening to us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or whatever podcasting platform you're listening to. Welcome to the Podium Finish Live, and I'm your host, Rob Tiansen. Joined alongside, as always, with my friend and co-host, Nathan Solomon, on episode 40, a milestone edition of TPF Live, the fastest hour of racing talk. And yes, it is our 40th show. I guess it's the big 4-0. We should probably get some, milestone stuff from our fans. But it's going to be a pretty fun, exciting show because this is the post-Pocono, pre-Indianapolis edition of our podcast. And there's just so much to get to. I promise I'm not reading off a cue card, folks. If I could show you a video camera of us in our little studios, I'm not reading off anything anymore, not that I ever did, but this is a really, really jam-packed edition of our podcast. Well, without further ado, the first thing I do want to mention is great job to Nathan Solomon, of course, because he is back off a twofer weekend. He did the race weekend in New Hampshire, and he just got back from Long Pond, Pennsylvania, for one of the more unusual race weekends I think any of us have ever witnessed at the Tricky Triangle. In more ways than three, but I'll get to that little pun here in just a moment. And yes, that's my best Lenny Briscoe joke for you Law & Order fans that listen to our show. But for this edition of TPF Live, we are proud to welcome Todd Bodine to our show. He will be popping by later on for the hot seat that Nathan did over at Pocono prior to race weekend. Unfortunately, the truck practice and qualifying got rained out, so Todd's only laps on the racetrack were during the race, and if he did catch the truck race, it wasn't exactly the most memorable finale for Todd Bodine, but the Onion has accomplished so much that I don't think one race is going to define his legacy, and I don't mean the Onion newspaper satire publication. I mean the Onion as in Todd Bodine. Pop culture joke right there. But anyways, folks, with so much to get to on the fastest hour of racing talk, let's bring in Nathan right now. And I'm sure he's pretty tired, but happy. And now he begins another countdown because he is going to be going to Watkins Glen with our buddy Sam. So how you doing, bud?
Doing well. I am very glad that I was at the track the last 2 weeks, because the last 2 weeks, there's certainly a ton happening in the sport. So I was really glad to be able to be there and covering it. Obviously, we had a really big free agency announcement, or a silly season announcement, if you will. And now at Pocono, just playoff implications, points implications, integrity of the next-gen car, all that stuff, and a bunch of good races too. So we certainly have a lot to talk about, and I am already looking forward to getting back to the track here once again in a few weeks.
Yes, indeed. And it's not that long a drive because it's at your hometown track. So I think the plan was just to send you as far away as possible before you got back home for your last race of the season, unfortunately. But hey, man, maybe next year there's even more. And if 2022 was any indication, 23 is going to be a big year with NASCAR's 75th anniversary that I know you and I are ready to tackle as we get into postseason mode here on our podcast, which, not to be a stickler, that means school's almost back for you, which means the radio show edition will be back too. So I'm excited about that because I'm already thinking of some songs I want to put on the jukebox for TPF Live. But on here, we're just talking about racing. So with that, folks, let's head on over to Podium Perspectives. Well, Pocono offered some history for good and bad reasons. Let's start with the bad, because it's like going to the doctor's office and trying to tackle the bad news before getting to the good news. Now, of course, at Pocono, I think the big storyline, unfortunately, was the fact that we had our first disqualification in the modern era involving the winner and second place driver. They both happened to be from the same campus, Joe Gibbs Racing. And they happen to involve two of the most prolific drivers in the Cup Series, Denny Hamlin and Kyle Busch. I'll let Nathan explain more about that situation since he was at the track. But all I can say is when the news came out, when Nathan messaged our group because he was still in the media center, I was shell-shocked because of the fact that when the winner has been penalized, they've typically just had points taken away and, they kept the trophy, kept the win. No harm, no foul, really, other than losing points. And yes, we have had situations with encumbered victories like Joey Logano in 2017 at Richmond, where that victory was not allowing him to be in the playoffs that year, which obviously impacted the rest of his year. But the fact that Denny Hamlin had his victory stripped away from him in the modern era, I mean, that's never been a situation that's happened until this past Sunday, much less Kyle Busch, who was driving the M&M's car in the M&M's Fan Appreciation 400. That's just a hell of a way to say goodbye to that sponsor at the Tricky Triangle. So, Nathan, you were there at the racetrack, and I want to get your thoughts on this because that had to be a wild whirlwind of events. Because, of course, Sam Drace took some great photos, Denny Hamlin's victory celebrations. We got a good burnout photo. And then, before you know it, Sam was leaving the racetrack, and then things happened.
Yeah, that was pretty crazy. After the race, it seemed just like, any typical post race. I mean, some storms were coming, so I guess that gave it a little extra gloom to the mountains of northeast Pennsylvania. But, everything seemed pretty normal. Obviously, we went through our post race bullpen procedure. Went into the media center, did a press conference with Denny and Chris Gabehart, and which is his crew chief, of course, and Joe Gibbs, and that was the second time I was actually in on that on a press conference with those three this year. Obviously, they won Richmond when I covered earlier this year, and those three together, they're pretty entertaining to listen to. The press conference goes on and everything, and it's done, and everything seemed normal, and we were all kind of anticipating an inspection update because basically what they do is they announce the inspection, what regardless of what happens, they announce an inspection update once inspection has been completed in the Cup garage. But at it's kind of hard to describe, but just at one point all of a sudden, it just I just got a really weird feeling. I'm like, all right, I don't it's I just couldn't describe it. Like, I just felt something might be up, and like I didn't know what. I didn't have an idea what might be up, but I had a feeling something was up. I didn't expect it to be disqualifications of the top two cars, but or shortly after, like literally a few minutes after, I thought something might be up. NASCAR Communications announced that the 11 cars and the 18 car had been disqualified. And that just kind of took a minute to like register upstairs. And like the 11 and 18, I was like, oh my God, that's the top two finishers. There was a moment there, obviously the 20 of us or so in the deadline room knew before anybody else in the world, basically. And like when I dropped it into our chats, like nobody believed me because it hadn't gotten out really yet on Twitter, except like the tweets were just going out. But that was pretty unbelievable. And obviously, we went through the press conference of, with Brad Moran, the Cup Series managing director. And obviously we found out a lot more this week about what happened with the car. So the penalties were the same thing was essentially wrong with both vehicles. The front fascia had a what NASCAR described a piece of material that should not be there. That's basically how they described it Sunday, because at that point, JGR had not decided if they were going to appeal it or not, because that was an appealable penalty. They eventually decided not to appeal it, and then yesterday afternoon, I'll read the statement that Wally Brown, the director of competition for Joe Gibbs Racing, announced after they declined the appeal. He said, in a review of the post-race infractions on the 11 and 18 cars at Pocono, it was discovered that a single piece of clear tape was positioned over each of the lower corners of the front fascia ahead of the left front and right front wheel openings on both of those cars. The added pieces were 2 inches wide and 5.5 inches long, with a thickness of 0.0112 inches, 12 inches, and installed under the wrap. This change in our build process was not properly vetted within our organization, and we recognize it is against NASCAR's rules. We apologize to everyone for this mistake, and we have made changes to our processes to ensure that it does not happen again. So even though that like little piece of tape seems insignificant, obviously there's a reason why NASCAR caught it. We don't know exactly what it does. Obviously, you know, ever so slightly, it changes the front end shape of the car, like something that the naked eye will not see. I don't know if it got picked up by their scans or not. Obviously, they kind of unwrap that part of the car when they tech the car after the top five cars after the race. But I don't know if also something kind of popped up in their scans or that something might be there. And they obviously got caught. So I don't know if those two cars had some sort of aerodynamical advantage. That's kind of what it sounds like. Even though if it wasn't significant, but if it creates, you know, more drag or something, then that could give them that little boost. And obviously those are the two dominant cars. So you really look at that and say, hey, you know, if those two pieces of tape weren't there, would they have been those two dominant cars? And hey, who knows? Could this have slipped by last week at Loudon too? You know, could have something similar been on the 20 car when the 21, and now I'm not saying that that's true or not. I'm just saying that that's, you know, certainly possible, but obviously a really tough position for Joe Gibbs Racing. And NASCAR is making it pretty apparently clear that they are not taking any BS with the next gen car this weekend. Because between Saturday and Tuesday, the time that we're recording this, they've issued five penalties. They've issued obviously these two penalties, which are just simple disqualifications, and they lost a lot of points to that because obviously they're the two best cars all day. Michael McDowell just got docked 100 driver points, 100 owner points, and his crew chief Blake Harris is suspended for 4 weeks with $100,000 suspension. And that's a lot of money for an organization like that. And then there was two penalties earlier in the week on Saturday to the Petty GMS cars for rocker box violations. So, I thought NASCAR did a pretty good job of making it clear before the season started, don't mess with these cars. I thought it was pretty clear after Brad Keselowski got penalized after Atlanta, don't mess with these cars. And now fast forward to Pocono, we're talking about five pretty significant penalties. I'd like to say that the message is across at this point by NASCAR. Do not mess with these cars. Do not do anything illegally or you will get caught.
Oh, absolutely. The expectation was laid out, like you said, very early before even the season started, because of the fact that this next-gen car, these parts are delivered, they're manufactured in a way that's very different from the Gen 6 car, from any other iteration of a cup car that I have seen since 1991. We get the fact that teams are going to push the envelope on things. I mean, that's kind of what makes them competitors. They have to push the envelope. But the risk versus reward factors are definitely, in these teams' cases, they were not worth it. I mean, the number 34 team of Michael McDowell has been pretty good all year. And I know Kyle Larson in the bullpen the last couple of weeks told Nathan that, you know, not having Cliff Daniels around at the racetrack, it wasn't that big of a blow for them to have him away from the racetrack. Things were business as usual, but, you know, you can't dismiss, at least for the 34 team, how useful and how impactful Michael McDowell's relationship is with Blake Harris. And to mess around with a manufactured part, I mean, it's pretty clear as day not to do that. You know, it's like you see a sign that says beware of dog and you go to the yard and you take your chances. Of course, the dog's going to chase you. So it's a really unusual situation. I mean, the penalty report, I don't think I've ever seen that that busy before. Usually it's for like, I don't know, missed lug nut in the Xfinity series, which is still a pretty big deal. But this past week has been the most severe situation. I would jokingly say that NASCAR had been pissed off by its kids in the case of the teams. So lesson learned, folks, do not anger your parents. You know, try to be nice to them, in this case, the NASCAR officials. And, you know, I don't know if it's the last time it's going to happen because teams are still going to push it. I mean, I guess you might as well try to do it now before the playoffs, but it does make you kind of raise your eyebrows a little bit I mean, I don't think Chris, I don't know if Christopher Bell had a situation like that, but I read somewhere on Twitter, I think it was a crew member from Alpha Prime Racing who said, if you think your favorite team doesn't cheat, think again. It's just a matter of the fact that your team didn't get cap, get caught cheating. So, I mean, don't think that, fans at home, that your favorite team doesn't cheat. They all do, but NASCAR was not letting that one slip by. So, man, oh man, I hope it's not going to be a storyline at Indianapolis because we never want to see officiating impact, the outcome of a race, much less like in sports when the referees dictate the outcome of a football game. Or basketball game, as Nathan will tell you later on in the winter months with St. Bonaventure's bonus team. We certainly don't want to see them get screwed over by calls, but hey, that is sports sometimes. Rivalries are also a part of sports, and that brings us to our second topic. It's, we've talked about it several times, but again, it's, definitely time sensitive. It's certainly something we can talk about right now. Ross Chastain versus Denny Hamlin, part three. At least in my scorecard, it's part three. Could be part four, Nathan's world. I don't know. But let me set up part three. Yeah, he agrees with me. So I'm glad I got that affirmation on that. But let's set up that situation because God forbid that was unusual to see. I mean, let's set up the scenario. So it's 18 laps to go, and row one had Ross Chastain and Denny Hamlin. And if you didn't think trouble was not going to happen, you have been hiding under a rock. And yes, I am borrowing a phrase from Larry McReynolds on Sirius XM NASCAR Radio when he was on the show with Daniel Trotta. I totally agree with his opinion. So Denny Hamlin was on the inside lane. Ross was on the outside. Ross was thinking in his infinite mind that he could get around Denny. Denny and Ross, they rubbed fenders on the exit of turn one, and all hell broke loose after that little bit of contact. Now, it wasn't like an obvious short track, like deliberate crash. It was kind of, think of like what happened during 2017 at Phoenix, folks, when Chase Elliott and Denny Hamlin had their little beef at Martinsville, and then Chase just basically pinned Hamlin against the wall, and Hamlin's tire gets cut and hits the wall again, I think a few laps after. Well, in this case, it was a pretty immediate impact because Ross bounced off of turn one and hit the wall, the inside retaining wall. And unfortunately, the collateral damage was done to Kevin Harvick, who was on his way to probably a top 10 finish. And he needs a good finish because he's 17th in points. But at the end of the day, all three of them are losers because Ross Chastain, obviously DNF'd in that race. Kevin Harvick, he is going to have to fight really hard to get into the playoffs. He probably needs a victory at this point. And then, of course, Denny Hamlin with the disqualification. So let's just focus more on Hamlin versus Chastain. I mean, I think Mike Davis tweeted, I think yesterday he was saying something like, thank God for Denny Hamlin and Ross Chastain for having a rivalry. Without it, you're not giving us anything to talk about. P.S. I hope you two genuinely don't get along. Is this rivalry good or bad for NASCAR? Is there a sort of a drawing point or like a breaking point where maybe this has to kind of get quelled over?
No, not at all. I think it's great for the sport because, and any good sport, or any great sport rather, has to have great rivalries. I mean, in baseball, of course, you have the Yankees and the Red Sox, and that's a fantastic rivalry. There's got to be some great rivalries in NASCAR, and that's what makes it entertaining. And look, I think NASCAR realizes this. I mean, they have some folks that are executives in NASCAR that are former race car drivers. And they understand it. I mean that, it appeared, Denny got wronged by Ross Chastain in two separate scenarios, Gateway in June and then Atlanta earlier this year. And they understand how Hamlin feels, and they know that he's gonna go back there and get revenge. And I think they also know that, it's not like that they're going out there and blatantly wrecking each other on purpose, because none of the three incidents were blatant, like intentional. Like I don't think the Ross Chastain, both times Ross crashed Denny, I don't think it was intentional. I think it was just over aggression, and they know how Denny felt about it. And by they, I mean NASCAR, and they were gonna let Denny get his revenge on Chastain, as long as it's in a way where, I guess he won't wreck the whole field, kind of like what Noah Gragson did at Road America, because that was a really, really bad decision. Very narrow spot of the racetrack, a road course nonetheless. So you got to go through the grass to try to avoid it, and you were spinning and wrecking and everything. And that was not a very smart decision there. But I think Denny got his revenge back in like I said, a very smart way. He didn't just right rear or left rear Ross Chastain and turn him in front of traffic. He kind of just ran him up into the wall a little bit, ran him out of room. I don't know if Denny tried to run him into the wall, but I think Denny certainly didn't want to give him any room. And if he crashed him on by himself, he crashed by himself, and it certainly wasn't blatantly obvious. Now it's kind of unfortunate that Ross hit the wall and came down in front of Kevin Harvick and took out an innocent car like that. I know that that's certainly not Denny's intention at all, but he did what he had to do to get his revenge on Ross Chastain. Now, like I said, if it was a blatant wreck, like left reared him or right reared him, and he took and Ross took a huge hit, and because he really didn't hit very hard.
Yeah.
If it took a really big hit, then I think that's at that point, that's when NASCAR needs to step in. But if they're just kind of racing hard, running each other out of room like that, and someone wrecks like that, I think it's good for the sport. There's certainly been tempers between the tempers and tension between the two. It's certainly been talked about a lot, and rivalries like that will get fans to watch. Like, I mean, I think you kind of look at last year, Kevin Harvick versus Chase Elliott at Bristol. That was one of the more entertaining moments of the year, and that's kind of another situation of kind of just boys have at them. Like, they Harvick wronged Elliott, and then Elliott basically wronged him back, and let so his teammate could win. But I love stuff like that. I again, as long as it's safe. But I feel like we'd be talking about this a lot more. Like, this is obviously this story alone is like a huge story, but like, obviously, all the disqualifications, and then I know we don't have this written in our show plan, but of course the debut of Ty Gibbs and Cup on Sunday, that's also now
Yeah.
been that storyline's been also washed under the rug because of the whole penalty situation. But I think it's really good for the sport as long as they kind of go at each other in a way that's safe for the rest of the field.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a part of NASCAR's history to have sort of a two-driver squabble that goes on. I mean, at least from 1981, I could name a few. I won't go through all of them because that would be basically the entire show. But obviously Dale Earnhardt had a rivalry with basically everybody, Rusty Wallace namely, and Jeff Gordon. Rusty Wallace versus Jeff Gordon, Carl Edwards versus Brad Keselowski, Kyle Busch versus anybody. the list goes on and on. I think you have to have rivalries in NASCAR. We need that because I know some folks sometimes think that NASCAR is devoid of personalities, it's devoid of character, and now we have it. You've got the watermelon farmer, sort of the kind of quote, I forget if it was Kyle Busch who said that Carl Edwards has his Mr. Ed act. You sort of have the Andy Griffith kind of act from Ross Chastain, like the oh gee Willikers kind of thing, and Denny Hamlin sort of Mr. Wilson, if you will, from Dennis the Menace. I hope I'm not dating myself on that, by the way. But anyways, it's kind of fun, and like you said, as long as no one else gets involved, and then let the games continue on, I suppose, on the racetrack. I have to say, Denny was pretty wise about how he did it. And no one really thought it would happen at Pocono because we always say if you're going to retaliate, don't do it at a super speedway, do it at a short track. And I think he caught him off guard. But I also at the same time, I don't think Ross is stupid enough to think, oh, he's not going to get back at me. It's just all talk. Is it over yet? I don't think so. We'll see. Not by any stretch of the imagination. It's not going to end so quickly like Joey Logano versus Matt Kenseth. So stay tuned because there's probably gonna be part four, part five, part six, and part 20 when we get to 2023. So hang on to your hats, boys and girls, because that's gonna get wild down the stretch. Let's talk about a good story at least. Oh, actually, before that, I mean, first of all, we should be sending our well wishes to Kurt Busch. We don't know his status at the time, although I think he is on the entry list for car number 45 heading into the Verizon 200 in Indianapolis, which we'll talk about afterward. But obviously, that was a pretty, I'd say, scary situation, but a pretty hard hit he took off of turn three as he was getting ready for his one lap efforts in the final round of qualifying. And he backed his number 45 McDonald's car right into the wall. And that was wild. And I know Nathan covered it on his sidebar, how Ty Gibbs basically was heading back to Charlotte. And then he gets the call, or basically gets told at 1 o'clock that, hey, we kind of need you back here. He does some sim work. He gets into Kurt Busch's fire suit and honestly did a pretty good job finishing 16th in a cup car, which actually we did talk about this last week. That's why we're not doing it this week. It kind of makes us wonder about the status of Kyle Busch. We'll hold that off for next week. I mean, Kyle Busch at least, because it's becoming more and more possible that he will not be back with Joe Gibbs Racing, which kind of is a strange situation to think about because he's been with them since 2008. But let's talk about Chase Elliott. Not his mustache per se, but the fact that I don't know if you can say he's lucky, he's good, or both. But, since basically Nashville, his worst finish has been second. That's not bad. He's putting up a Kyle Larson-like effort in terms of performances. Sure, he doesn't have three wins in a row that Larson did twice last year, but to basically be so incredibly consistent to win at different tracks. Although I know he has a bit of a different feeling about winning at Pocono, and in fact, he said in a Zoom call that if Danny wants to keep the trophy, he can do so. He doesn't really want to celebrate the victory due to the circumstances, but the reality is, Chase Elliott's continuing to rack up those victories. His most recent win is historical because he led no laps, which I don't think I've ever seen that happen too in my life. But let's ask you this question to you, Nathan. Obviously, he is just on a momentum. He's had some few breaks. Can anyone stop Chase Elliott?
Right now, no. I mean, I think I've said this in previous episodes, but for the most part, we don't really have any championship favorites except for one, and it's far and away at this point, Chase Elliott. I don't think there's anybody in my eyes that, outside of Chase Elliott, I can say with certainty, like, hey, this person's going to be in the championship four. Like, I know, guys like Martin Truex Jr. and Ryan Blaney, they both have a lot of stage points, and they've certainly accumulated some playoff points in that regard too. Like I said, they're good on points, but we don't even know if they're going to be in the playoffs at this point just because they haven't won a race yet. A couple of the hotter drivers earlier in the year, someone like William Byron, he's really struggled lately. Alex Bowman, he's really struggled lately. So that's kind of what makes me think that there's not, any true favorite right now. Kyle Larson, I mean, I obviously he won that race earlier in the season, has really struggled to finish off races this year for various reasons. So again, outside of Elliott, I can't pick anyone off the top of my head that screams championship contender right now, because I feel like there's probably 12 other guys that could realistically be in the championship four. It's really hard to tell right now, and I think that we kind of thought that at this point in the year maybe we'd have a couple of championship favorites. I thought maybe we'd have two or three. I didn't think we'd have just one. I mean, Chase Elliott's on an absurd run right now. He's obviously winning three out of the last five races. All of all the five ra of the two races he didn't win, they're second place finishes. And from what it seems like and sounds like, NASCAR is not finding any problems with what they're doing to their race cars. I mean, when you're in the top five or and even in the top two, you're prone to more inspection every week. The top two cars get basically completely torn down at the racetrack. The top five cars go through more, more inspection, a more deeper inspection process than, 6 through 36 or 6 through 40, depending on, how big the field is. But, they've been looking at his car in depth every single week, and they're not finding anything. So, obviously, he's on it right now. Alan Gustafson and that entire nine team are on it right now. And you know, until someone else can maybe go out there and win a couple of races, Chase Elliott is absolutely the guy to beat right now going to the playoffs here in just a few weeks.
It's a pretty scary thought to know that the competition really has no responses and nothing definitive to challenge Chase Elliott with because, you know, they've, again, won at different racetracks. They were, I mean, they didn't win at Road America, but they were pretty dominant, pretty scary. Only Tyler Reddick could keep up with him. But otherwise, I mean, he's been a concrete monster. He has been able to showcase what he can do at different racetracks around the NASCAR circuit. And that leads me to think that you'd have to choose, you know, Chase Elliott when it comes to Indianapolis, which, you know, if you don't, you better have a pretty good pick outside of the number nine team. So let's actually get to picking a winner, or in our segment called Pick a Winner. And we're only going to focus on trucks at Lucas Oil Raceway Park, or IRP, for you folks that are curmudgeons like me, and the Xfinity and Cup divisions at Indianapolis. I am sorry, we're not talking about ARCA. Again, if you want to hear that, I think you kind of know where to go for that. I'll just say go to your pantry and grab yourself a soup can.
Though I will say, shout out to Mama Smith, though, making his first ARCA start this weekend.
Yeah, oh, that's true. And it's really cool that he's driving a car that is basically in delivery of AJ Allmendinger's champ car ride from 2006. So maybe we'll talk about it next weekend, because we do have some photographers at Indianapolis and IRP. Now, before we actually get to the picking winner segment, let us actually, again, commend our team of Nathan Solomon and Sam Drace at Pocono. They just nailed it all weekend, and it's been so fun to collaborate with both of them on what we've needed. One of our, you know, longtime TPF members was saying to me, like, hey, I've never seen TPF be this productive and cranking out quality content. And I'm just like, well, it's because we have a great team and we know what we got to do. And I hope you race fans are enjoying that content. So I just wanted to give both of them a big shout out.
And also, and of course, like, seriously, like, big shout out to Sam, because, like, especially Saturday, because Saturday was like crazy long. Like, there's on track activity basically from 9:30 in the morning until 8 o'clock at night, and it was 95 degrees and clear all like the entire day. It was so hot. So I mean, I don't know how he did it, like being outside all day. Like, he didn't really have many times where he could like just come in and like go to the media center and like upload and get some water and everything. So shout out to Sammy, killed it.
Absolutely. Sammy D knows what to do, and hopefully Watkins Glen is a little bit cooler and a lot more drier than when you guys got through 6 hours of Glen for the IMSA race. I know he was saying in our chat room, he's like, Mother Nature just really needs to quit it with me, because y'all had that crazy thunderstorm on Friday.
Yeah, every so Sam and I have done four races now together. We did Dover, we did IMSA, Watkins Glen, we did Loudon, and now we did Pocono. And all four of those races, there was some sort of weather delay. Like at Dover, obviously the race got postponed to Monday. Well, we got 70 laps in or whatever. IMSA, an hour and a half of the race got red flagged because of the weather, or close to an hour and a half. Loudon got delayed by 30 minutes because of rain. Like, and I mean, this tiny little cell popped out of absolutely nowhere and poured on the racetrack at Loudon. Like, it's completely unlucky. And then Friday afternoon, my goodness, you should have seen the thunderstorm that we had at the track. Holy moly, that was quite the storm. Like, it was raining like at a 90 degree angle. It was,
ooh,
wow, it was quite the storm. And I didn't see it anywhere announced in the National Weather Service or anything, but they were saying on the PA system, like, tornado warning there. But I don't know. It was crazy, though. It was quite the storm. And then by the time the ARCA race happened, it was like clear skies. So what a weird day.
It's because they know that ARCA night in America had to happen.
That barely happened, just because they green flag for that ARCA race wasn't until like 6:45 and sunset was 8:20 for a race that is longer than the truck race.
That's a fun fact that I didn't realize.
And of course, you can't go through an ARCA race without a red flag, especially at a track greater than like a mile and a half. So, yeah. Of course, naturally, there's a big old rack, and Next thing you know, it's 8:15 and there's still 20 to go. So then they called it. But anyway, I'll get
There's
off my soapbox about Arca and we'll do some picks here.
Yes, we're not ragging on Arca, I promise you folks. If you love Arca, more power to you. I'll talk about winning picks though, and I'll let Nathan kind of have the lead on this because every week we kind of alternate who goes first. I went first last week. So in this case here, we'll start off with trucks at IRP and then head back to the big Brickyard racetrack, talk about who we think will win and Xfinity and Cups. So Nathan, take it away with a race-winning pick and a dark horse for each of these major NASCAR races in Indianapolis.
Okay, so for Indianapolis Raceway Park, this is going to be so difficult because nobody's ever really raced here, or if they have, it's been forever because the Truck Series hasn't been here in quite a long time. Like I very faintly remember Indianapolis Raceway Park as I was growing up, as like because I think Xfinity went there for a little while too. And I just remember Xfinity and trucks, they would go to some of those other, smaller tracks, they'd have more standalone events there, and which is obviously different than now to an extent. So I really don't know. I'm gonna kind of stick with the hot hand, Zane Smith. He's kind of been on a sort of similar Chase Elliott type run lately. Obviously, he kind of missed it at Pocono a little bit and did not have a great day. But I think he had four straight top three finishes going into that Pocono race. He's been so consistent all year. I think Pocono was just his third finish outside of the top 10 all season. And one of them was a disqualification. So I'll go with Zane Smith to win the playoff opener. Obviously, he feels pretty safe where he is. He almost has a whole race advantage in points, so he's pretty safe. But I think he'll be the first driver to punch his ticket into the second round of the playoffs. Now for the NASCAR Xfinity Series, this race has a lot of Cup Series drivers in it. I almost have to like look at the entry list to remember who's in this race because I honestly keep forgetting. I believe Alex Bowman is in this race for Hendrick Motorsports, one of the few starts that the 17 car will be making this year. I'm gonna go with Alex Bowman to win this race. I know he's certainly not, road courses are not his favorite place in the world. But I think he'll go out there and have a really good run in that car. When he was in the Spire truck at COTA, he had a good run there. So I think he'll go out and snag a victory there. And on Sunday, we have a little bit of a toss-up now. We have a former F1 driver in the race, Daniil Kvyat. I believe that's how you pronounce
Any
his name.
caveat?
Kvyat, my apologies.
It's all right.
So that's really cool. Of course, we have the defending winner of last year's race, AJ Allmendinger. I kind of want to stick with the dinger. Like he's been in the mix in nearly every road course this season. Obviously, he's pretty good there at the Brickyard. It is a I know it's a very special racetrack to him. So I am going to go with Mr. AJ Allmendinger to go and get the victory at the Indianapolis Road Course. And just for the heck of it, because we have a very special doubleheader weekend, I'm without any reasoning, I'm going to give you an IndyCar pick.
Oh,
And
yeah.
feel free to do the same, because remember, IndyCar and NASCAR are at the same place this weekend, which I wish there was more of, because I think that'd be great for motorsports, especially because there would not be any, any colliding TV windows. I will go with Marcus Ericsson to win on the Indy Road Course, and that race will be Saturday at noon.
That is a really, really great pick. And Marcus Ericsson is really well, really, really ready to get back to Indianapolis. Probably the site of his biggest motorsports moment of his entire career. What a win would do for him at the road course after winning at the actual oval layout. So anything is possible for him when it comes to this Saturday's race. I think it's the Gallagher Grand Prix. So let's actually talk about those race start times and all of that. So starting off with the truck race at IRP or Lucas Oil Raceway Park or the park or whatever you want to call it. Of course, we've got the ARCA race that's going to be at 6 p.m. East Coast time. And that will be a 200 lap race at the track. It is the Reese's 200, which you can catch on, I believe. on FS1. So they'll probably do the remote telecast from Charlotte, and you'll just have to imagine that they're there at the racetrack. And not long after that, of course, the truck race is on at 9 p.m. East Coast time. So you kids at home better get your Geritol on, get your graham crackers and soda, and stay up late. You let your parents know that you don't mind breaking the curfew for some truck racing. And oh, by the way, it is the playoff opener for the truck series. So important to note that because their playoffs begin so early that we don't want to disregard that. Now, their race, of course, the truck race, that can be seen at 9 p.m. on FS1 after their little sojourn on the Mothership Network. And that race is, of course, the T-Sport 200. Now, as far as my pick is concerned, you went with a popular choice, Nathan. I think Zane's a really good choice, but I'm going to go with another guy who's pretty much a trendy pick. And I actually was in the Zoom call with him on Tuesday afternoon for media day availabilities. Easy for me to say. Carson Hocevar seems like he's determined to win. He was kind of asked a lot, like, what's more important to you, a victory or a championship? And maybe to some folks, his response would surprise you. He thinks a victory is more important right now than a championship because obviously he wants to build momentum and he's been so close to winning a race. And what a victory would do for him, for Nice Motorsports to get his first checkered flag of his entire career. And I know for him, with what's been happening to his girlfriend Peyton, I'm sure he, they both draw inspiration and strength from each other. And certainly our heartfelt prayers and thoughts to Peyton as she battles her health situation, and we're all hoping for the best with her. Now, as far as the Saturday races are concerned, Nathan did kind of preface that for us already. Now, of course, the Gallagher Grand Prix, the IndyCar race, that is going to be happening on Saturday, and that will be at, let's see here, at 12:30 p.m. on NBC. It's almost at 12:08. That's the grid formation. Now, all of these races, to my knowledge, are going to be caught on NBC. So this one's the Gallagher Grand Prix. So let me give you my pick and dark horse, since I kind of follow IndyCar quite a bit more this year, these times. I'm going to go with Pato O'Ward for my pick because he's a really good road course racer. He did get the victory at Barber Motorsports Park in Birmingham, Alabama. And he is off a really amazing victory at Iowa on the second doubleheader race. He is climbing back into the championship picture. And if he gets the win, oh boy, it's not over yet for the championship hunt. As far as the dark horse is concerned, this is tough because you got so many good competitors. And we don't know yet if Joseph Newgarden's going to come back after what he went through on Sunday afternoon. It's kind of hard to call Simon Pagenaud a dark horse because this man is an IndyCar legend to me. But let's go with Pagenaud. I think he could do some good things for Meyer Shank Racing in that number 60 ride. Now, going back to NASCAR, some nasty car talk, of course. Let us go ahead and think about the Xfinity race. That's going to be again on NBC. It's the Pennzoil 150, which is at 3:30 p.m. East Coast time. Like Nathan said, we've got some interesting picks. He went with Alex Bowman. I'm going to do an AJ Allmendinger pick on this one. He came pretty close to winning the Xfinity race last year before Austin Cindric decided that we all had to hear him sing back home again in Indiana. And if either Nathan and I get a chance to interview Austin at some point, I will have him sing that song again. And hopefully he doesn't break my camera in the process, but we'll see. And as far as the dark horse is concerned, I'm going to go a little bit different here. I'm going to go with the guy who won at Mid-Ohio in the truck race, because let's not forget, we've got Patrick Kligerman and that Emerlyn Gase Motorsports Chevrolet this coming Saturday. Chevrolet per the entry. I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. But anyways, the Kligerman is going to be my dark horse pick. It's going to be a good one. And it would be pretty sweet to see him win again. And if he plants the flag in Indianapolis, that's going to be a hell of a celebration after what he did at Mid-Ohio. And now moving on to the Verizon 200. The cell phone provider that I have on my phone, and no, I'm not sponsored by Verizon. If I were, anyways, that race is on Sunday, 2:30 p.m. East Coast time, 1:30 p.m. Central. We've got a plethora of great contenders. As Nathan mentioned, Danny Kvyat from F1 is going to be in this race in second Team Hesberg entry, unlike his teammate Loris Hesemans. He'll be in a Toyota ride because they don't have any manufacturer alliances, so they can just go with anything. As far as a race winning pick's concerned, I am torn on this. I mean, you could go Tyler Reddick, you can go Chase Elliott, you could go Ross Chastain or Daniel Suarez. And I'm just naming the drivers who you think would be good at these tracks. I am going to go a different way here. I will say Michael McDowell will win on Sunday. Why is that? Because the man needs 100 points back. He's not going to get it all on Sunday, of course, because the maximum points you can earn in a race is 60. So it's though, I mean, if he wins, obviously that makes it a little bit sweeter for him. He is a good road course racer. And let's not forget how well he ran at Sonoma getting in the podium finish. So, no, not on top of the podium. I am not going to say that joke. Now, as far as the dark horse is concerned for Indianapolis road course, you definitely not Kevin Harvick because he hates road courses. Maybe I'll go with Austin Cindric just because the man knows how to get around a road course. We've seen how well he runs in the Cup car at road courses. And it just feels like a good little like clashing of everything together if he gets the victory on Sunday for Team Penske. So that's my thoughts on that. What do you folks at home think? Are Nathan and I going to be right? Let us know. Hopefully you don't pick a driver who gets disqualified after the race. Unfortunately, like in the case of Nathan, when you pick Kyle Busch. And it was a wise choice. But we talked about at the top of the show, they had got disqualified. If you want to tell us your picks, tweet to us at the podium finish or at Nathan's handle and Solly02 or mine at Rob T. Johnson. If we're right, cool. If you're right, maybe I'll send you a prize. So stay tuned for that and let us know who you are going with because right now we're going to go sit in the hot seat. Now, for this week in the hot seat, we're not talking about sitting at Pocono where it was 90 plus degrees or being in Texas here in central Austin where it's like over 101 degrees. And at this point, anything below 90 degrees will feel like winter to me. But for this week, we're going to talk about The Onion, not my favorite satire publication, of course, but Todd Bodine from Chemung, New York, the youngest of the three Bodine brothers, recently made some history in his way because he was able to reach a milestone 800 career starts in NASCAR. And I'm going to let Nathan take this one away just because he got to talk to Mr. Bodine himself, the two-time Truck Series champion. So, Nathan, I know you got to talk to him for about 8 minutes or so here, but let the fans know about that experience with Todd before we get to hearing from Mr. Bodine.
Yeah, for sure. So I interviewed Todd Friday for well before what was supposed to be practice and qualifying at Pocono, obviously. That got canceled as when we were doing the interview, a big old dark cloud started to form overhead. But it was really cool talking with Todd, just kind of learning more about how this opportunity, driving this truck for Stuart Friesen and Hjalmar Friesen Racing and the partnership through Marcus Lemonis and Camping World, because if you forgot, Marcus Lemonis put out a tweet about yo, give me 800 reasons why Todd Bodine should do 600 starts, or sorry, should do six more starts to get up to 800, and I'll sponsor him in six races in a truck to do it, and obviously he kept his word for it. And Todd got that opportunity. So, for someone who grew up, very close to where I'm from and I live, it was super cool to see him on the track throughout the season. It was cool to be there for his final start. And there was just so many people, wearing, the Onion shirts. Like there was of like all the shirts I saw all weekend, I probably saw the most. I'm seriously, I'm not kidding. I saw the most for Todd Bodine and Stuart Friesen, which is really cool to see. Two local products, two Pocono Raceway. So, without further ado, let's get into the hot seat. Mr. Todd Bodine, the Onion, is here and joining us right now.
This is your 800th start. Just to start, kind of what are your emotions heading into this race?
They're bittersweet. There's no doubt. Love what I'm doing. I've loved racing for 800 races, and just to know that this is the last time I'll buckle in and do it, it's It's a little hard, but, you know, I'm very fortunate to have had a great career. Met a lot of great people, had a lot of good times, and winning some races along the way. And, you know, best of all, I got to do what I love to do for a living. And not a lot of people in this world can say that.
You know, obviously Marcus Lemonis is a huge part of this deal. Describe a little bit kind of how this deal got put together after the tweet he put out.
Well, after the tweet went out, Stuart Friesen, Stuart was the first one to text me and ask me if it was for real. I told him, I guess it is. You know, Marcus says it is. So he talked with his owner, Chris Larson, and they said they want to do it. And it was pretty flattering that Stuart wanted to, and Chris wanted to do this. And Trip Bruce, the general manager, and John and Jonathan, everybody was on board with having me come in here and doing this. So very, very excited to do it when they come up with it.
Did it feel like the right fit right away?
Absolutely. You know, I've known Tripp for a long time, raced against him for a championship one year, and a couple years actually. A lot of the guys in the shop were on some of my teams in the past. The shop is actually my old race shop when I drove with Travis Carter. So, I mean, there was a lot of things that felt like home, and these guys have made me feel like it's home and very welcoming, so it's been a great experience.
And you've built such a strong relationship with Stuart. I know you've been to some of the Stuart races. What's that friendship been like with Stuart?
You know, that's probably the surprising part about this whole thing. The present surprise of this whole thing is the friendship that we've developed with Stuart and Jessica. Just great, great people, and to be able to share this with them and have them part of this little journey has been great, you know. And the guys, like I said, on the team, a lot of them I've known for a while, so it's been an incredible experience.
When you figured out your schedule with Helmut Friesen and then balancing that with what you're doing with Fox, why did you feel that these six tracks were the right tracks and the right fit for you?
Well, it started off, I had a meeting with my boss, Lindsay Mandia, and we went through the schedule, and she picked 9 races that she felt would be okay for me to not be in the studio doing my job, and then out of those 9, I had to pick 6. So that's where the schedule came from. And honestly, a lot of the determining factor for what tracks it was is what ones we could have the most fun after the race was over. And that's the truth, you know, because this whole experience, this whole thing is about having fun. It's about making memories and enjoying the last 6 times. Oh. And then to come to Pocono, I've been coming here since 1972 when I was 8 years old, watching my brother race the 3/4 mile track. So this is like a second home to me, and the Mattioli family's always been, you know, always treated the Bodines like family, and it was a no-brainer to come here for the last one.
You've had a lot of ups and downs this year. Finished 10th at Darlington earlier in the year. How would you evaluate your 5 stars up to this point?
We've run really well and competitive. We've had some bad luck along the way. You know, last race at Nashville, we top 10 for sure, maybe even a top 5, just depending on how it shook out, and then we got the flat tire at the end of the race. So, you know, that's racing, that happens, but the goal was to be competitive every race, and we've pretty much done that.
When you came back to racing, how difficult was it to kind of relearn everything and get back, you know, knock off the rust and get back into that racing group?
It wasn't hard. It's like riding a bike, you know, you get back on the seat and you go, and it doesn't take no time. And, you know, Las Vegas was the first race, and, you know, 2 laps into practice, and I was running wide open, and it felt like it used to. So it was really not a big deal.
When you returned to the Truck Series, how did you see the competition now change from when you were last in the series?
Well, it's, you know, these guys, these kids are good. There's no doubt, and this competition level is incredible. But they race differently, you know, and that's been the talk in the garage area and in NASCAR is how the racing has changed and the lack of respect and those kinds of things. So, you know, they race hard, but You know, when we raced hard back in the day, we still showed respect.
You know, you were born in Chemung, New York, not far from here. How special is it to have your 800, you know, so close to the winner?
Well, that's the thing. We wanted to do it at Watkins Glen, but it was taken off the schedule. And like I said, Pocono has always been home for a second home for the Bodines, and to be able to do it here, it's just as special if we were at home.
You know, you're a two-time Truck Series champion. You won Toyota's first NASCAR championship back in 2006. How special is it to be in a Toyota to reach this milestone?
Well, that was the plan. You know, I wanted to be in a Toyota. It worked out when Stewart called. I mean, they run Toyotas, so yeah. I really didn't want to do this in any other manufacturer.
Outside of your championships, you know, what are some of your favorite racing memories?
You know, there's been a lot of them. You know, we've raced hard for wins. We've had some ups and downs, and you know, it's hard to pick one. You know, 800 races. There's a lot of great memories.
Would you entertain any more races after Pocono if the opportunity was right, or is this going to be it for you?
Well, that's definitely it for this year. It would have to be an incredible opportunity with the right stuff. You know, I'm so happy doing what I do with Fox, and I enjoy that, and I'm on a great team there. You know, and the reality is, next year I'd be 59 years old, and it's just hard to compete with these kids and these young guys. And you know, I think I could do it if I got back in shape and did all the things that need to be done. But it'd take an act of Congress to make me do it.
Sure. And you know, as you leave the driving side of NASCAR, what do you hope your legacy is?
You know, you're the first one to ask me that. You know, hopefully that I was a good racer, a competitive racer, a fair racer. You know, I've always been a guy that's tried to help people, tried to help the younger guys with advice and coaching and those things. And you know, I've had a couple thousand crew members in my career, and the one thing that I always try to do is treat them with respect and understand how hard their job is. You know, I used to be one of them, and I hope the crew members that I've had appreciate that.
Ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Todd Bodine for the last time as a NASCAR driver. But don't worry, folks. I'm sure we'll see plenty of him on FS1 and Fox for the truck coverage. And I'm sure he'll stop by the Race Hub, which is hosted by Adam Alexander, Caitlin Vinci, and of course, Shannon Spake. And Josh Sims, if I hadn't said his name already. But it was such an awesome, awesome situation to have Todd Bodine here. And maybe we'll hear from him later on this year. We'll see. It's because we want to try to get some more of the legends of NASCAR on this program, since we are a little bit of an inside NASCAR type show for you folks who do the podcasting situation. But yes, folks, episode 40. This is a pretty happening edition. And I know for episode 41, we're still going to have some Pocono content that Nathan's going to roll out here, because as I understand it, he had a pretty gnarly interview with Sam Mayer that... you know, we'll talk a little bit more next week, but certainly if you know what happened in episode, I think one, we did have Sam Mayer as one of our first guests, not episode one. It's one of the earlier episodes. I can't remember our own podcast. He was definitely a doubleheader episode with Josh Berry. He was pretty funny. And I haven't heard the interview yet with Nathan and Sam. So it should be cool. I don't mean Sam Drace. That would be pretty cool if we had Sam and Nathan. That would have been a pretty fun situation, but maybe next time. And we should probably invite Sam on this show one of these days, just because he did go into a certain show. I can't promote that one, just kidding. I know he likes our show, so I'm just giving him some crap. But anyways, you know, Nathan's got his content during the race weekends. I myself have Pato Award coming out, a little bit of it, because he's actually the subject of my school project. Yes, St. Bonaventure. You should go study there, folks. Just saying. And, of course, a bit of AJ Allmendinger coming up this week, when time permits. But, yeah, Nathan, do you have anything else you want to share to the fans before we wrap up our show?
Not much. Just, you know, shout out to everybody for, obviously, that listening to this and everybody that followed me along or followed along with me these last couple of weeks at, you know, at Pocono, read my stories, listened to my interviews. You know, promoted my stuff, whether, you know, Twitter or YouTube or Facebook or Instagram or all that. So thanks everybody again for watching, listening, whatever. Certainly helped make these last 2 weekends a success for myself and the podium finish. So excited to get back to the track more here in the future. Obviously only one more race is planned for me in 2022, but that's not to mention that that I won't have more in the works here for 2023. Well, who knows what could happen between now and the end of the year, but we will see. So thanks again, everybody.
Absolutely. We appreciate the support for Nathan. He's been a really good, hardworking journalist out there, getting our name and brand out there. And his YouTube channel is also skyrocketing, which I love to see. And certainly, I think the shift towards a more digital journalism direction for us is imperative. So I'm already counting down to when I get to Texas and hopefully having some of my interviews filmed, and also trying to get our little boom box or the little mic box available for us. So certainly some upgrades in the future for us. And hopefully one of these days when we have enough money, we'll have some swagger for you folks. Because I know some of you folks want to stay on top of the podium. And I don't mean like a toy one. I mean like a shirt thing. So really appreciate what Nathan does, and as he does on this podcast and his race coverage. Sam as well. Of course, Josh at Loudon. Everybody at TPF, great, great job. And I'm looking forward to our Indianapolis team rocking and rolling at Speedway Indiana and Claremont, Indiana. Let's go ahead and call this a show so we can prepare for episode 41. I hope you enjoyed episode 40. I know Nathan and I did, and you can catch our previous episodes on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or any podcasting platform out there. But for now, for Nathan Solomon, and of course for Top of Dying, I am your host, Rob Tiongson, saying thanks so much for tuning into the Pony Finish Live, the fastest hour racing talk. We'll see you again next week as we recap the action that was at Indianapolis and then look ahead to Michigan. So, as I always say in all these shows, let's go get that checkered flag. And until next time, so long, everyone.